Know your reformers. Martin Luther was a German monk and professor who was plagued with doubt about his salvation. When he finally read the Bible for himself, he rediscovered the doctrine of justification by grace through faith. His bold witness for biblical truth was the spark that ignited the Protestant Reformation. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Now we're talking. This is Wretched Radio. I don't know if you have been aware, there's a new pro-life skirmish that is taking place, mostly online, but also in the halls of power, regarding the issue of IVF, in vitro fertilization. What do we do with this new technology that allows a couple that heretofore could not get pregnant to have a baby, their own baby? That sounds so awesome. And yet there are some people who are doing some thinking and some investigating as to what this process is and whether or not it meets biblical muster. An article was just written by Emma Waters. It's called Biblical Ethics and In Vitro Fertilization. And she did, so far, of all of the things that I've read, the finest job of laying out all of the issues in a way that doesn't feel condemnatory or like insensitive, because these are sensitive subjects, are they not? We're talking about a good longing, want to have kids, want to have grandkids. Those are good things. And when God doesn't open the womb and you hear there's an opportunity for that door to be flung open, oh, it's very appealing. And yet, there are ethical issues surrounding it. And Emma, I think, did a bang-up job compiling those in a way that allows us to lead the conversation on this new pro-life issue. This is happening more. Our current president, he is just enthusiastic about IVF. Uh-oh, is that a problem? Or is that a good thing? And the answer, if you want the bottom line and the spoiler in advance, it kind of depends a lot. It depends on all of the considerations you're about to hear. But I think ultimately it's going to depend on whether or not people die in the process of a new life being created. Let's jump into the article, shall we? The premise for this is that conception is when human life begins. At the moment of fertilization, that little teeny tiny thing is, it's everything you are. Everything that you are today was in that joining of sperm and egg. Everything that you are now was there. In other words, a conception, worth and dignity. Thus, IVF does not deal with potential human life, but actual human life. You could gloss over that line real quickly, but I think that's important to remember when you're talking about IVF. And please note, if you're struggling with this, I'll try to present this, I hope, in a way that doesn't sound like I'm slinging arrows at you. We're trying to lay this thing out for your consideration, because I think there might be a way to do IVF without sinning. But I don't think that's going to be the predominant way that it is used. And we need to remember what Emma just wrote, and that is when you're talking about IVF, you're not talking about a potential baby. You're talking about a baby in a petri dish. It simply has a different host than the uterine wall, but it is still a human being. So the stakes of this conversation are not low. It's not a possible human. It's not a potential baby. It actually is. She writes, most embryos created in IVF are destroyed, frozen, or failed to implant, because they want you to have a lot of them to implant as many as possible, and then potentially do selective reduction so you don't deliver six babies. Or you create a bunch, they put them underneath the microscope to pick the one that they think genetically will have the highest success of being healthy, and then implant that. And what happens to the other ones? That's a big issue. And so there's three considerations if you're pondering IVF. One's intentions behind the action itself, and the resulting outcome. Those are the three angles that she takes in this article. Because it's a good desire, But that doesn't mean we can use any means necessary to achieve a happy end. A happy end is a baby that is born. We celebrate that. Whatever the conception method was, it's still an image bearer of God, and we celebrate that child. But that doesn't justify doing it at any means necessary. Left unchecked, the temptation to idolize one's fertility is one of the most powerful forces in the world. Since the fall of humanity, this idolization has led people to control by playing God rather than steward and being faithful with what God has given us. Rachel, jealous of her own sister's fertility, what did she rely on? Her maidservants and mandrakes, which apparently was a fertility stimulant, or it was thought to be that, to bear more children with Jacob. Despite her efforts, God still gave Leah more children. Their desire for children and the intention behind their actions reflected God's covenantal promise. It does not justify pursuing any means necessary when it violates God's teaching on the sanctity of marriage and life. We saw that with Sarah, didn't we? She wanted that baby that was promised. So she had her husband sleep with the maidservant, which, by the way, apparently was a pretty normative way for some married people to have babies. If she couldn't, they borrowed the womb of the maidservant. Now, you would say, well, that was wrong, and you would be right. And I couldn't argue, but they got a baby. Sarah got a baby. Yes, she sure did. And look at what that's brought us in the Middle East as the wild donkey continues to rage. We can't use the end to justify the means. Israel turned from worshiping the one true God to worshiping idols. And who was the false god that Israel most often turned to? Asherah, the goddess of fertility. The Israelites would bring harvest sacrifices or perform sexual acts in front of these false goddesses in hopes that they would receive fruitful crops or the blessing of children. And you would say, well, that's wrong. And you couldn't argue, but having a baby, they had a baby. It worked. Just because it worked doesn't mean that it is right. Let's consider actions. Again, this is from Emma Waters. The use of pre-implementation genetic testing, that's PGT, is an embryonic genetic screening test that gets done. And it allows the doctors to determine the sex of the embryo, the potential health, Down syndrome, single gene disorder, cystic fibrosis. 75% of all fertility clinics in the U.S. offer this. 73% of these clinics allow parents to select or discard based on if the child is a boy or a girl. Oh. Now, I know if you're considering in vitro, you're saying, well, we wouldn't do that. I know we're talking about the bigger issue of IVF. And if we are going to, as pro-life Christians, say it's a good thing in general or a bad thing in general, the way that it is currently being used in general, lives are being sacrificed. Now, that doesn't mean every Christian who does this is guilty of that. So please hear that. But we're talking about the institution of IVF. Is it in general something that we should be supporting enthusiastically like our new president does? It's natural for parents to desire a healthy child, writes Emma. And their intention may be to protect their children from difficult diseases or pain. But the action rejects the inherent worth and dignity of each child. So you would choose the value of it. You're placing a value on the child by selecting this one and not that one. Whose role is that? Whose job is it to make those assessments? God's. And how does he see every fertilized egg as an image bearer, equal dignity, equal value, equal worth? So instead of receiving the child as a gift from God, regardless of health complications or gender, this testing rejects the image of God and what Scripture teaches on the value of all life. A lot of parents reject PGT, and to them I say, well done. And they don't discard any of the embryos that they create. That is a good thing. Unfortunately, it's not the majority thing. Then there's the question, if it's morally acceptable to freeze embryonic human life. That's standard practice. Fertilize 10 eggs, use 3. What happens to the 7? They go into a freezer. And I don't think that I don't think I've heard anybody ask this question. Is that right? But you can't, those babies can be thawed and they can become babies. It happens. It really does. It maybe seems like Frankenstein-y too, but it really does happen and it really does work. But the question that gets begged in all of that is that even right? It would be like me saying, okay, so I want Jimmy to live a year longer someday. So I'm going to put him in a meat locker for 365 days and just, he won't be able to move. He'll just be frozen. You'd go, I don't think that you should be doing that to a human being. And that is why it's important to remember when you're talking about IVF, you're not talking about potential life. You're putting a little Jimmy into a freezer. How'd you feel about that statement? I'm not sure that that really was beneficial for any of us, but that's what's happening. But alas, or a lad, there are more considerations as we Christians assume the role of leading the conversation about IVF. Next on Wretched Radio.
Big news from Fortis Institute. You know how we have 8 fellows already bringing you free daily content at fortisplus.org? Well, starting February 7th, our very first fellowette will make her debut. Libby Glossett, one of the finest biblical counselors in the entire country, is coming on board. And you know, people might think we're trying to add a woman's voice to check some type of boxes or appease the feminists, but the truth is, we found one of this country's most incredible biblical counselors who just happens to be a woman. And her way of applying God's word to real life is extremely powerful. She'll be launching a weekly podcast and creating resources just for women. So if there's a woman in your life looking for solid biblical teaching, tell them to mark their calendars for February 7th and head to fortisplus.org or go ahead and download Fortis Plus on their mobile device right now and be ready for Libby Glossin. fortisplus.org.
Perhaps you've been wondering, is there a Christian university that isn't woke or that hasn't compromised on important biblical doctrines like, you know, the age of the earth? There is. It's the Masters University in Southern California. Beautiful campus, all of the athletics and activities that you've come to expect from universities. But it's more than that. The academic programs are most excellent, preparing students for the future. The Washington Post just said, number 6 for preparing students for the real world. All that, plus the Masters University isn't woke, and it is thoroughly biblical. Would you like to learn more? I encourage you to visit the Masters University at masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
Knowledge is power, but only when applied. Like a story I heard about on the radio the other day, this woman worked a job for a tech company previously, and she stopped working at some point to be a mother. Years later, realized that the stock options they gave her were worth millions. Imagine having a bank account filled with millions of dollars, never using it. Well, that's theology without application. Introducing Integrated with Dr. John Krotz.
We'll help you connect head and heart, turning Bible knowledge into life-changing action.
Thank you, Dr. Krotz. And at Fortis Institute, listen, we're standing strong in a world that's losing its way. Our name means strong in Latin, and that's our promise to you. Visit fortisinstitute.org or download the Fortis Plus app today and start listening to Integrated with Dr. John Krotz, and then join us in standing firm no matter the cost, because in a world that's falling apart, we're building something strong. FortisInstitute.org. It's FortisInstitute.org.
Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teach us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called the cornerstone. When laying a foundation, every stone must be aligned in reference to the cornerstone. God is building his church as a holy temple, and as believers, we are being brought into line with the cornerstone, Jesus Christ. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
It's time for Christians to be leading the way, with or without Michael Youssef, I might add. This is Wretched Radio. I think that's the name of his program, right? Leading the Way with Michael Youssef. I'm pretty sure.
I'm pretty sure you're correct.
Or is that Leading the Way, or is that Chip Ingram? One of those guys. I think when you look up Leading the Way, did you know there's an In Touch magazine? Charles Stanley's ministry is called In Touch, and there's an In Touch magazine that came out after In Touch was alive and well. I think they tried to get him to stop. Because I don't know what that magazine was about, but it probably wasn't about the Bible. Who's leading the way, Jimmy?
Michael Youssef.
Michael Youssef. With or without Michael, we are going to lead the way in the conversation about life. All aspects of it. All aspects. Now, we're not going to become enamored with one aspect or another. No, the totality of the life issue. That means end of life issues too. That means the care for the people who are alive, not just for the people whose lives are being taken in the womb or in a petri dish. We are the ones who should be promoting every aspect of life. And an article by Emma Waters dealing with the ethics of in vitro fertilization, I found supremely helpful, because she does her level best to not come, you know, like sharp and at you for this stuff, because she understands the longing of your heart to have a baby, and that it's hard to hear these conversations and read an article like this, but it's a subject that can't be ignored. And we can't put blinders on and pretend that there are not some ethical components that are anti-biblical in IVF. And so it is. We're making our way through her treatment of the subject very helpfully. The question of whether or not to freeze embryonic human life is one that needs to be answered. Is it even right to do that? You're suspending the natural progression of a human being. So I think it was in this article. Maybe I read it someplace else. Imagine being in a freezer for like 10 years. Your life started 10 years ago, but it got kind of put on pause for 10 years. Now you're born into a different decade. How old are you, actually? Is that even right? While there's no set shelf life for a frozen embryo, most perish naturally after a few years. That's a big problem. And the process of freezing and unfreezing leads to further health complications, such as an increased risk of childhood cancer or heart problems. So there are increased risks in using IVF. A growing number of children will learn that they have unborn siblings frozen in nitrogen gas containers, with parents now too old to gestate them. Well, there's a consideration, isn't it? You find out that you've got siblings that are at the IVF factory. What do you have a responsibility to them? Your parents can't bear those children anymore. In other words, there are implications to worldviews and these decisions. Got to wrestle. What do you do? What should we do? Do we have an obligation? That's my sibling. Should such siblings agree to gestate their own brothers and sisters once they're married? Well, that gets even stranger, does it not? Or do you stand by as they're given up for embryo adoption? Or do you say, go ahead, you can melt them and let them go? There's considerations in this conversation. Brings us to a broader question. The Bible presents a clear vision of the package deal of marriage, sex, and procreation. That is the pattern that we see from the beginning. One man, one woman, together, one flesh union with the procreative act blessed by God to do what? To procreate, to make little image bearers. That's his design for it. Let's talk in vitro fertilization. It introduces a number of people to the contraceptive act, doesn't it? It introduces potentially other individuals. Now, there are people that are using IVF. They're not married. And so a woman, I've never understood this, but I think it simply reflects how women so desire to have babies and to be mothers that they're willing to use a stranger's sperm to make a baby? That's not the package deal that God has designed. That violates the pattern that is best for us. Malachi 2:15. Did he not make them one with a portion of the Spirit in their union? And what was the one God seeking? Godly offspring. So guard yourselves in your spirit and let none of you be faithless to the wife of your youth. That is as good a summary of all of the verses that talk about the package deal of marriage, one flesh, procreation, procreative act. IVF changes that package. Technology renders intimacy unnecessary for procreation. And marriage has little bearing on those whose gametes are used. IVF thus decouples marriage from sex, sex from procreation, and if a donor egg or sperm is used, biology from parenthood. I know that maybe doesn't have a ton of force for most people, but that is a very powerful argument. That what IVF does, it pushes out elements. A man and a wife are not intimate to make that baby. That's not God's design. That's not the way God intended it. And this goes back to the conversation that we've been having here about what is good for us? What is best for us? It is best for a mommy and a daddy who are joined in a one flesh union to come together in a one flesh act to make a baby, an image bearer. That's the best. Anything else, not as good, to say the least. Such technology does not merely form individual behavior. It also shapes how cultures view children more broadly. This is such a good exploration of the issue on a more holistic level. How does IVF inform the world's thinking? It's a symbiotic relationship because I think the world's thinking informs IVF. But I think IVF also has an effect on the world, just like abortion does. When we have a low view of what is in the womb, it's only reinforced by making that act of murder legal. What does that say about the value of life? It diminishes it, and so does IVF. Now, the health risks that are involved. IVF increases maternal and neonatal health risks compared to naturally conceived children. You should know these numbers if you're pondering this. They have a higher likelihood of preterm birth, low birth weight, cerebral palsy, cancer, minor cleft palate, or congenital heart defect. These children are 4 times more likely to be a stillbirth, twice as likely to have autism, and a 44% chance of non-chromosomal birth defects. Mothers, the risk of hypertensive disorders, including preeclampsia, increases by about 50%. More likely to undergo medically necessary cesarean sections, experience higher rates of gestational diabetes, and their risk of severe maternal morbidity, severe postpartum hemorrhage, ovarian hyperstimulation, severe preeclampsia, or eclampsia, seizures, also spikes. You need to know there are health risks involved. Now, I grant you, there's health risks in having a baby naturally, but a part of the conversation cannot be overlooking that those health risks are increased significantly. There's a world of difference. This is from Emma. There's a world of difference between accepting the risk of a disabled child, where that risk is natural, and ourselves imposing that risk in pursuit of our own purposes. It's risky business, and we need to be aware of that. And I think the Christian posture would have to accept, wait a second, if that puts my wife in harm's way, that's not going to happen. Not on my watch. Back to the article from Emma. Rather than pursue marriage and children in their early 20s and 30s, career-driven women may indefinitely delay childbearing. That's probably happening a lot. It encourages women to pursue marriage and children not as the cornerstone of their life, but to treat it as a capstone of their life. Once I get everything else, I get education, I get career, I get this much money, then I'll have kids. In other words, IVF does inform our thinking about life. Having said all that, and there's more, we need to be leading the way with this conversation. We celebrate life. We understand the longing for having children, but we cannot be utilitarians. We cannot let the ends justify the means. And I think that there's some other ethical conversations that need to happen, even when I think IVF can be done way more ethically than the majority route. There are Christian parents. No, it's like, no, fertilize one egg. That's it. That's what gets implanted. It's expensive to do it that way. But I think that is a way that is far more ethical than all of the aspects and considerations of the general use of IVF. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.